Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1125. This is your host, Danny Pena, and also joining me for this episode of Gamertag Radio, all the way from Europe, all the way from Switzerland, is super... He's in the future right now, Mr. P-Rock.
What do you mean? What's up, Pete? You're in the past.
I'm in the past, yeah.
How you doing, man?
You want to come over here to the past?
Nah, man. I'm good here in the future, dude.
You good?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good knowing that it's going to be the end of the world 9 hours before you do. So,
oh my god, crazy. Everybody, thank you for either watching this live on Twitch or listening to this on a podcast on any platform out there. Head over to gamertagradio.com, put your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes. You could find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio, subscribe, follow us, or post a review. Also, if you'd like to be part of our family discussion segment episode and also be part of our giveaway, this is how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, Pete, before we start, I've been playing Resident Evil, the new Resident Evil game. Really dope. I'm enjoying it. I only played for like 2 hours, so because I've been really busy. But, man, game is beautiful, man. Woo! Love how it connects from the last game, man. So good. So good. Do you see yourself playing any, like, in the future of this game at all?
Maybe. Maybe, but I'm a chicken, so... I don't know if I would be playing it a lot. I did see our good friend Mark stream it last night, and there was this one moment where Lady D comes out the door and scares the bejesus out of him, and the howl that he emitted on stream was hilarious. It was a quality moment.
Yeah, it's good. Highly recommend it, man. No spoilers, but it connects with the last game. And it's intense. It's really crazy. So make sure. I didn't receive no review copy. I just purchased a game because I'm a huge fan of horror games, you know. And I remember years ago, I got Alan Wake early, and I wanted P to try out for the first time, and P was freaking out. I knew the moment, like, yo, P is gonna jump right now. He's gonna jump on this moment. But it was fun watching P playing that game for the first time. It was awesome. Super cool. Paris is not gonna be joining us for this episode, but he will be back later this week because we have a lot of things to talk about. Plus, E3 is coming up, so we're getting a lot of invites to virtual events and so on. So stay tuned. We have a lot of cool stuff planned here on the podcast, Gamertag Radio. So make sure to subscribe so you get all the content. So, Pete, let's talk about this announcement from Ubisoft, man. So there is a new free game from Ubisoft. It takes place from the Division universe. It's a Division spinoff, and it's called Heartland. There's not much information about it. All I know is you could register right now to be part of the beta, and they're going to give us more information, hopefully during E3. Do you have any idea what this is about? Heartland from Ubisoft.
Not much, but I do know... based on the press release that they put out, you know, first we're going to see a free-to-play version coming out. We're going to see a mobile game in development, as well as a Netflix movie coming out in 2021-22. So as originally planned by and promised by Ubisoft and Red Storm back in 2019, they were going to be pushing content for The Division. I know 2020 seems to be like a blurred year. Does it really count as a development cycle? But yeah, they've been working on this. And so they unveiled a project roadmap that's going to feature Massive alongside with Ubisoft Bucharest doing development on this new game mode. A new game mode, new ways to level agents, focusing on build variety and viability. Then they, like you said, they mentioned the mobile game, which there's not a lot of information on. They've got the DLC that's coming out for The Division 2, as well as a novel. And like I mentioned, the movie that's going to be on Netflix featuring Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Chastain. My personal opinion is definitely necessary for this IP in general, right? It's been missing that over the last year and a half. My concern personally, as a former Division agent playing the game, the build meta diffuses the game's viability way too quickly. I've seen it way too much where, yes, it's great that it caters more so to the hardcore fan in the way that it forces players to constantly play the game, to constantly be on top of the meta. The changes that come out, whether it's your gun, whether you're going to be, whether they're going to be focusing more on SMGs, are they going to be focusing more on long range? Are they going to be focusing more on assault rifles and DPS? But lately I've been seeing many games taking root in people's catalogs, and this is going to be forcing new and returning players to make a choice. The build meta might end up swaying either new or returning players away. It might just become too much too soon, right? So, that is a big concern for me because I love The Division, but unless you're there playing nonstop, you're going to get lost really, really quickly, and your guns are going to be ineffective essentially if you're either you haven't picked it up in a year like many players, or you're a new player picking it up because you see it either because it's on sale because of the new stuff going on or the press release that just came out. It picks up interest like we saw over the last couple of weeks with Respawn and Titanfall 2. Now it's going to have people coming back in. Oh, let me get ready. Let me get prepped. But the concern for me is that build meta going to be too difficult? So I'm hoping that this focus on build variety and viability means that if I've got a specific build that I like playing, for example, my agent, I have an LMG build that I run with that every time you stow your LMG, it automatically reloads it. So I can just swap guns and I've got 100 rounds going down range, and then I swap back to another LMG and I have another 100 rounds going down range. So yeah, I'm more of a, spray and pray, accuracy by volume style player, or if I'm just suppressing enemies, that's great, but that doesn't work too well in a lot of games, simply because the way the game develops over its life cycle, that may not work 6 months from now, 10 months from now, 12 months from now. So I'm hoping that this new focus on variety allows players to keep the builds that they put together and like, whether it doesn't feed into that build meta. It almost becomes too daunting and it almost becomes work because you have to start tracking, numbers and what guns do and what specific add-ons or modules go, your armor bits. It becomes a pain almost. So I hope it gets more to become a more pick up and play type a game. Mm-hmm. And then when I see the news about, new game mode, I swear if it's not survival,
it's a free game. Well, it's not a game mode.
Hold on. I'm just going based on the article and the press release. Mm-hmm. So when I see that, I'm thinking survival. And if I don't see the return of survival, I'm going to be highly disappointed. Because that was my favorite from the original, and it was always promised. And I remember when we had our time down in North Carolina, the three of us went there, and that was one of the key questions that we asked everybody: when are we going to see survival? Yeah. It's on the way. Well, it's been 2019 that game came out.
It's been 2 years, right?
It's been two years now. So where is survival? And that has to come back. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I'm gonna do a what if moment. So what if we're watching the Ubisoft digital event and Red Storm finally talks about the game and they announce it is available right now, right? And once we find out about the game, it's a totally separate thing, similar to Apex Legends and Timefall. It takes place in the same universe, But what if this is a battle royale game? Do you think it will make sense for a game like that to be battle royale? Because you, Pete, you are a, I think out of all of us, you are a huge fan of battle royale with nice. PUBG. You played Apex. I know you play a little bit of Fortnite, but it's not your thing. But you're a huge fan of battle royale. Do you think it will make sense for a game like this, Division?
Yes? Absolutely. The game, and I said this, I think, back in 2019 when I was talking to Terry Spear from Red Storm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Division universe sets itself perfectly. And actually, if you think about it, survival, in a sense, the survival game mode for the Division is sort of like a battle royale. You're run going through the weather, you know, the highly volatile weather that's inside that game mode. If you don't find those first few pieces to build up your warmth, you know, to help you stay warm in the game, you die because of the cold. So I think that whole thing, plus with the virus and everything, I think it just lends itself perfectly, because if you're not within the zone in the right time frame, or you don't have the mask on, you get sick and die. Similar to like in the regular Division campaign, when you start going into those highly virulent areas, you know, the ones that are marked with the red squares or the red crosses, you can't get in there because, you know, you're blocked because you don't have the right respirator on. So you have to put on the respirator to get inside those areas. Even the quarantine zones, the quarantine zones, when you go in to play the PvP, though, you have to have your mask on in those situations. So I think that whole universe in general lends itself perfectly to a battle royale game, because it's you don't have to worry about, you know, well, you have to worry about the zone closing in, compressing, forcing all the players to get in back together and play. Whether I don't have a fear that Red Storm can pull that off, because we've seen them do Ghost Recon, we've seen them do Rainbow Six, obviously we've seen them do the Division. So gunplay and, you know, first person or third person shooter type games, I don't have a concern with them being able to do that. My fear is going to be, have we started getting to the dilution phase of, now we're just oversaturating the entire the industry. We've seen that already, right? Obviously, you know, PUBG has been able to survive kind of, but, you know, Fortnite and Apex are the de facto leaders. We have new games coming out that are starting to leverage some of those. We talked about it a few weeks ago, obviously, with Halo. Would we see a battle royale type instance in that multiplayer? Mm-hmm. I would love to see it, me personally, because I'm a huge Tom Clancy fan. I'm a huge Division fan, and I would love to see that in there. And I just hope that they can iterate it well.
Yeah, and there's a couple of questions too that I have. Like, where's it going to take place? Is this going to be take place like a New York City, Washington D.C., or just a separate, totally random island out of nowhere? Like, I have that question. Also, is it going to be still third person view for this type of game, like similar to like Fortnite and, mm-hmm. and PUBG, which I think it will work if they do it like that. I think it will make sense to do it like that perfectly. Now, if it's first person, it's going to be kind of weird to get used to that.
Why?
Because automatically, when I think of Division, I think about third person. I'm not thinking about first person view at all, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? So
that I can see that, yeah. Because of the way you use cover in the Division, it'd be perfect, because then you could just run yourself up to the corner, run yourself up to an embankment or to a box or something like that and grab cover. So yeah, in that regards, yes. I still would like to see them throw in a first person. I think adding a first person view to that would actually add to needing more skill, because with third person view, you tend to be able to maneuver the camera so you can rotate and see kind of like, and we saw it in PUBG when it first came out. I personally primarily play first person when I play PUBG, but I know, you know, it does have a third person view server so that you can jump in, you can play third person with friends. Mm-hmm. I think either way, it'll be fine. I would just, me personally, I know you personally would probably prefer third person. I would prefer first person just for the game difficulty version of it. But I think either way, I think it would be great. And I don't think there's an issue with location. I think the locations are fine. It's not like they're going to have the entire island of Manhattan. You're going to have sections. So, you know, you'll have sections of Manhattan, or if they, you know, if they push out to Washington, D.C., it's going to be in part, you know, it's going to be at Washington, D.C. So it's, that is great, because then, as we saw in the Division 2, you could start, well, actually both did, but I think Division 2 started to leverage, you know, height and, you know, multiple floors and buildings a little bit more. So I think you could definitely do that in specific areas where you can, you've got Overwatch and you've got friends with snipers, and you can hit long range while other people are suppressing or flanking with CBQ weapons. So I don't see an issue with it. I think it'd be perfectly fine doing that.
Yeah. Now, another thing too, it's, I have like a lot of questions, Pete, when it comes to this stuff.
I'm in.
Does it make sense for, because look, this is the issue that I have with Battle Royale games. I don't like when it's the same like other games. I want a new experience. Like this is why I love Apex so much, because it is totally different. Now they added 3v3, which is arenas. It's like a must play. Love it. I play that more now than the Battle Royale game for Apex. But anyways, should Red Storm add enemies in the Battle Royale game, like to make it unique and different, like compared to like other Battle Royale games, if they plan to do something like this similar? Because I don't want them to just, okay, here's an island, here's your squad, and you're going to fight against other squads and that's it. Like, I want to see something unique. Like, what makes me want to go and play this? Because I played Hyperscape. Didn't I like it at all? I think that game was terrible. You know what I'm saying? So, and that was a Ubisoft game. So what's going to make this unique compared to other, if they plan to do a Battle Royale game? I want this to be totally, totally unique and different, but have that Battle Royale experience.
I don't know how they could make it. How do I say this? So going back many, many years to when Paris's first introduction, right? The infamous, you know, what is my end game? You know, and, oh, you can get a pink gun, right? We remember that story vividly.
Yeah.
If they could leverage end game results or end game loot within the bonus after, if you successfully extract from this battle royale instance, maybe they could use that to give you gear that you could use towards the PvP to encourage or entice players to play it more. So that way it's synergistic between unique loot in between the BR with playing in the DMZ? What is the zone? The dark zone. So
dark zone, yeah.
So let's say you and your friends play this battle royale. Again, remember, rumor, we're just making rumor. We're making stuff up right now. So
we don't know anything that's going on. We're just like
making things up. We're talking out the side of our neck, as they say in the streets.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's say you play this BR. You extract safely, right? You finish, you win, you and your team. You get unique loot that you can actually carry over into the dark zone, which will have a buff, which will, you know, which will make you a better player. It'll make you more, you know, it'll make your ability to play better, right? It's going to be a unique gun with higher perks, et cetera. And you could also carry that over into the regular single player campaign if you wanted to play, you know, single player or co-op. I think if you did something like that, it would be something, I think it would be different enough where people would want to play the game, and it would give players an avenue into the different, you know, the three different game modes, which makes sense, right? Because you're feeding players into the BR, giving them loot that they can use in the single player as well as into the dark zone or whatever other modes that they decide to give. And I think that would set them apart, because most of the other games don't have those multiple parts, right? PUBG has a team deathmatch type thing, you know, but everything is static. You start the game, you go in, you pick your loadout, and that's all you get, right? but you don't have a single player campaign. If you look at Apex, you have multiplayer, you know, you've got the BR and then now you've got arenas, but that's it. It would be similar to, I guess, Destiny, where in Destiny, you know, you can go in and you can get loot via the raids or any of the other things. You can use those for trials, or you could use those for the Crucible, or you could use that for single player campaign, right? So I think leveraging that same mentality, it feeds and it allows players to go into multiple avenues within the Division. I think that's one cool way, but I can't see how, if I did, I'd be a game developer, right? But I don't know of any, I can't think of anything else that they could potentially do that would give them, you know, a leg up or force or entice players to want to play it. It's definitely a good question, though. I would love to see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I have tons of questions when it comes to that. So look, for those that are listening or watching, send us your thoughts, like what you would like to see in this game. Are you going to make it something like something unique or something similar to other Battle Royale games? Let us know at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. That was like a very long conversation. But hey, I'm excited.
That's a great question. That was a really good question. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
It feeds right into my love. So
Yeah. So E3 2021 is going to be happening, and now there's now more companies going to be joining. I know we know about Nintendo and Xbox joining and a couple other third party companies, but now there's more. Sega, Bandai Namco, and Square Enix are also going to be supporting and showing some stuff during E3, man. So are you excited for this year's E3, Pete, or what?
I mean, when you look at the names, I mean, yeah, they're huge, right? Nintendo, like you said, Xbox, Capcom, Ubisoft, Take-Two, Warner Brothers. You know, now we've got Sega joining, mm-hmm. Gearbox, Turtle Beach, Verizon, Xseed, Square Enix, like you said. We still haven't seen some of the other majors, right? EA, Activision, PlayStation, Amazon Game Studios, Epic.
Oculus.
But, I mean, and sorry, but if I'm being cynical about it, but why? I think it's come to the point. I think we've all had this conversation either on or offline, but I don't understand why companies right now can't do this on their own, right? It allows, they do it on their own timing, it allows them to own the news cycle for themselves instead of sharing it. Think about it. Like, and you don't have to worry about getting outshadowed because somebody else's demo came out and it blew yours out of the water, or just focus the attention elsewhere. Whereas if you released it on your own, you own the news cycle for that day, right? And I can see the converse, you know, where people are saying, oh, well, you know, maybe because I'm sharing it now on the same time or same stage as the majors, it has more eyeballs on this specific time frame. But I have a concern about it. It's just, A, we're still not out of this pandemic. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we need it, if we honestly need it. I honestly think own the news cycle for your own product. Don't share it. It makes it more difficult for you if you release it during a specific time frame. Let's say you release it on the 12th, the first day, June 12th, first day of E3. You release it, but you're also releasing it against 15 other, 20 other games or 20 other companies who may have a bigger or better PR or bigger marketing budget than you. And then now your game is just sitting there with a lot less views or a lot less eyeballs, as opposed to, you know, these 14 or 15 other titles that you're sharing the stage with, or sharing the spotlight with.
Yeah.
And then, again, I'm not in marketing, so maybe that's not the right thing to do. Maybe you want to share the spotlight. Maybe you want to share that time where you have, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, eyeballs on the industry searching and looking for news. And maybe you can ride that wave in along with everybody else. But I personally think that they shouldn't share it. I think they should, take advantage of their personal time and just put it out when you're ready and just own the news cycle for it. What about you?
I agree, but here's the thing. Like something that I learned about last year, it was too much having events almost every week and announcements every week and digital events all the time for like months, right? I felt like it was just too much content, way too much. As a content creator, I was exhausted last year.
That's, you know, good though. So, I mean, when you're busy like that.
It is good. No, it is good, but I feel like I love the, I love having it sometime in June. Everybody's going to do their own thing and we're going to have the conversation. Then we could stretch that out and just talk about it from June all the way to the, like the holidays. But when it's like every, almost every day, every week, every month, it's too much. It was too much. Like I got excited at first with Xbox, right? And PlayStation, but then they were doing multiple. It was like, after a while, I was just exhausted. You know what I'm saying? But I know this year for E3, they're doing it on a weekend instead of having during the week on a weekday. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see, like, you know, when Xbox is going to have their press conference. I know Ubisoft, they announced they're having it June 12th at 12 p.m. Pacific. That's 3 p.m. Eastern. And I don't know what time is that for you, Pete, but
9 p.m.
Yeah. 9 p.m. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I want to see more of that, just like traditional E3. And I know there's been conversation that they're planning to have an in-person event sometime next year, which I hope that works. You know, if there's more people, you know, they get vaccinated and everything, you know, and we'll see what happens in 2022. But yeah, I miss the old way. I don't mind if they're having it at E3 or if they do it on their own. I think it should be fine. But I just don't want it like last year. It was just too much, in my opinion. But
well, I take umbrage in what you just said, that it's too much information over a long period of time. We always complain a month and a half after E3 that there's that drought in news until the holiday season comes back up, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why not enjoy having news dropping for 3 or 4 months straight, as opposed to having a 1 month high zenith of news and information, and then it's a slow trickle of information. You go back down, and then I would much rather, as a part of GTR, be able to provide information over and over and over and again, keep dropping news and information, as opposed to I would much rather have it as a slow feed to our to our listeners and our viewers on Twitch, as opposed to having it as a shotgun blast for 30 to 45 days and then there's nothing for 2 months until we hit the holidays. Me personally, yeah. Right? And of course. I'm not going to I can't talk for Paris, but I would much rather have a much steadier stream of information going out, you know, to everybody, plus for us, because, you know, we get to enjoy that. But, you know, I'd much rather be able to hit that constant stream of information for everybody as opposed to just a shotgun blast for 30, 45 days. But then here's my thing. The one thing that we love outside of actually seeing our friends in the industry during that time frame is access to game demos, gameplay sessions, you know. How do they do that now? One thing, and I was thinking about this when, you know, after you sent this, the topic stuff. The one thing that makes it more difficult is the lack of those demo availabilities for media. So how are they going to, how are they going to make it available? I know Parsec is basically like the industry standard right now. That's how Paris was able to play, Cyberpunk last year during, I think it was the summer. It was during the summer, remember him playing it via Parsec. So I know that there's other types, right? There's Shadow, there's Liquid Sky, and I think there's Vortex is another one. There's all these, you know, emerging remote access solutions for those. So I'm curious, and I'm pretty sure, because the industry is pretty smart, I can't be the only person thinking about this, there's got to be someone in the industry that's saying, how do we make these demo availabilities for media? That would be a perfect opportunity to give us in the industry an opportunity to play the game on a limited time basis. If you think about it, give us more than the 30 minutes max that we usually get in a gameplay session. Give us a day to play your game or a day or two on a time schedule type opportunity to play your game, really take notes and evaluate everything that we experience. Because mm-hmm. while that's great for that quick shot, you know, here we're going to give you a 5-minute slice of this game. Give me a 1-hour slice of your game and let me play. Yes, it'd probably count towards more work for developers in QA because as we've spoken about in the past, those demo opportunities are, you know, they're literally forks of the main development. I think that'd be a great way to let us in the industry play the game for an extended period of time and really get to the nuts and bolts as opposed to what we quickly get in a 5 to 10 minute game slice. And then shout out to John Wiki in the stream, in the chat. I had thought about this as well, but I mean, yeah. xCloud would be a great opportunity as well for giving, you know, demo access to individual media folks. What about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's that. Oh, hold on. Let's take a short break because we got to, you know, pay the bills. And once we come back, we're going to continue. We have to continue the conversation, you know, so we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, we're going to continue with the show. But first, let's talk about our sponsor, Oregon State University eCampus. Gamers like you know how rewarding it is to begin a quest and see it through till the end. Now, Oregon State University eCampus wants to help you complete another journey as you pursue your degree online. Oregon State eCampus is a nationally ranked provider of online education, delivering more than 80 programs at a distance. You can advance your career by earning a degree in fields like computer science, marketing, and natural resources. You, GTR, are you into like designing games, content creation, digital content, all that? Or if you're into this, I wish I had this back in the days. This is your opportunity right now to go to the website, just browse and see if there's any programs from, again, out of 80, to see if there's any there that will pique your interest. Just go check it out. I wish I had something like this back in the days. I mentioned this multiple times because it is important to learn about all that stuff, you know? So plus, this is backed by expert faculty, innovative online courses, and high levels of student engagement. Oregon State is ranked number 4 in the nation for online education by U.S. News and Report. Plus, with eCampus students in all 50 states and more than 50 countries, you will learn alongside a worldwide network of classmates. Plus, all online programs and classes are developed by the same world-class faculty who teach on campus at OSU. They're all designed to help you get where you're going much, much faster. So again, GTR, this is your opportunity right now. Again, like I said, go to the website. Just go browse. It's a lot of programs. If you want to know anything that's going to benefit you, go ahead right now. Take advantage of it. Visit ecampus.oregonstate.edu/GTR today to find the top-ranked program that matches your interests. Again, let me repeat the URL. That's ecampus.oregonstate.edu/GTR.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here, and Pete wants to know my thoughts about this. Yes, I love that because, you know, years ago, this is like during the 360 days, I remember I was at E3, and there was announcements of like certain games that was only, or demos that were available for 360 users that were at home, they could just play it, whatever. So they could do something similar like that, not only with Xbox, but every other company could be like, all right, this game, the demo or beta is available right now. And then people could, you know, they'll have it open for like the weekend or for the week during E3. And yeah, people could play it. I love that. Through xCloud, they definitely could do that. Or something like this could happen. Halo Infinite, multiplayer beta, available now for Xbox Game Pass subscribers. Have it right there available too. Xbox could do something similar like that, right? So yeah, I like this idea. I think that is really smart if something like that happens in the future, man. You know what I'm saying? So, but I know what, like, I know we talked about The Division, Heartland. I signed up for the beta. Did you register, P, or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So what might happen is they probably will announce it and the beta will be available that day, June 12th, or maybe the next day or whatever. And people could, you know, whoever registered could play for a little bit. And yeah, we'll try it out to see how it is. And then the official launch will come out in the future. I think that would be awesome.
Absolutely, if
they could do something like that. You know what I'm saying? So, but look, I know earlier I said about having it like that, having the announcement at E3. But here's the thing, like sitting down with people that works in the industry, they told me straight up, yo, it was exhausting last year having it like that. Because here's the thing, nobody had this plan that it was going to happen, like having multiple announcements and digital events throughout the summer. And it was because it was like a last minute change. You know, people start working on their E3 announcements like late of the year. So like around winter, that's when they start like talking and come up with ideas on what to do. And then it gets really crazy, like early of that year. So they expanded that. They stretch it out as much as possible. You know what I'm saying? So that's why you got to see, like, especially like with Xbox, it was kind of like the first digital event was kind of meh, and then it was getting a little better and, you know, stuff like that. And then the main one was the one in June or July. No, July was the main one for them. You know, PlayStation, same thing. You know, everyone was just learning last year because nobody knew what was going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I said have the announcements in during E3, have more announcements during Gamescom, because I know Summer Game Fest, that's another one that's happening during the summer. And even Jeff Keighley is changing the way how he's doing it. So, Pete, the news cycle is not going to be slow because there's going to be so much stuff during the year, during the summer, you know? So, all right. So one more topic before we go with fan mail. So, and this, somebody mentioned this on our Discord channel about a new redesign for a PlayStation 5 that's coming sometime next year. And I'm like, nah, maybe we'll see like in 2 years or so. But it looks like there's been rumors that we might see a brand new redesign of PlayStation 5 hardware sometime next year, man. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think that's a good idea? I thought we might see like in 2-3 years, but it looks like it might be happening, Pete.
Well, I mean, you have to think about it in this way. As it is in the tech industry right now, there's already a shortage, right? It's one of the reasons why you can't find a PlayStation 5. You know, they're developing and producing them as fast as they can. Obviously, I don't think Sony is bottlenecking that in any way, shape, or form, because that's just going to limit cash flow coming in. But if you think about it, the rumor right now is production is estimated to begin mid 22, with a possible 23 launch. And I'm using the past, you know, possible 23 being a launch window for that based on the previous history from PlayStation 4, right? They launched in 2013. Mm-hmm. The redesign came out in 2015, followed by a Slim in 2016 and the Pro later that year, right? So if you think about it, it's a 2-year cycle. They're going to need a year to build and produce. So, you know, you know, they're already ramping up, you know, parts and manufacturing. So this isn't a surprise, right? And what they're trying to do now is they're looking for improving the efficiency on hardware. They're looking at hardware or firmware improvements for existing issues like the fan speed, which is something apparently that Sony just can't get away from. They're always battling that shrieking fan speed. But why? Why do you constantly need to do a redesign? You can't even get one now, so why introduce a redesign that people can't get? I just don't understand it. And this may just sound a little bit more bullheaded, but why not just design it right the first time?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. Look, so we have a PS5 here, right? So the console is so big that we can't have it like the way how we have it set up. We have to put it in the shelf, but to the side, because it just doesn't fit. Like it's so long, it's so big, man. You know, so yeah, they need to make a smaller version, because this thing is way, way too big, man. Like I love the Series X. It's easy to carry around, put it on the shelf. Like it's, you know, even the Series X is a little bit too tall, but I could mess with that. I could mess with that. But PS5, they definitely need a new redesign, man. It's too long, man. It's too big for you. Now, I see you, Pete, buying maybe the new redesign of the PS5 instead of getting the the one that's out now, right? In like
two years. Yeah, if I'm going to get one, I mean, yes, there's going to be games that I want to play now, but I can't get a PlayStation 5 now. So I don't see myself honestly playing any new PlayStation games unless Sony EU wants to send me a PlayStation, please. You know, but again,
tough. That's going to be kind of tough.
short of a miracle and them sending me a PlayStation, how am I going to play their games? Right. And then they're going to, and like I said earlier, you're going to develop a brand new redesign, which is going to cause a fever of Sony fans trying to get the new redesign.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to get that if it's going to be just as difficult to buy that then as it is to buy one now? It's not like this shortage is going to be any more, is going to be any more, or is going to be any less. Right. The only way I can see it being possible is, and I hate to keep always bringing this back, but with the pandemic, you've got a much smaller production crew working in the factories to help to put these things together, whether it's gathering chips, whether it's you know, reviewing hardware, or you know, helping compile the machines, even though a lot of it is done by robotics, there's still a human element to it. So because of that lower human element in that whole production cycle, that contributes to the development of the production cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So unless we get more people into those factories, we're going to keep seeing a much more impacted production schedule, which means we're going to see these shortages continuing over time. So
yeah,
the only thing maybe is with the new redesign coming out, people selling the old redesign, the original design, the first gen PlayStation, but I don't want to put that big old thing on my counter. I just made this area wireless, all right? I just made it look super nice and clean. Now I'm going to put this big old white lunchbox looking thing? Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah. John Wick, look, I know we don't mention the chat that much on Twitch, but he said, hashtag send Pete
to PS5.
PS5.
Yes. I 150% support that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, man. All right, so we're going to talk now, answer questions from our listeners. Now, remember, we're going to give away two frames of Shack Eye gear. And by the way, Pete, this is your first time wearing it because you just got yours like recently.
Mm-hmm.
So how's it feel, man? Like, you know, I love mine. And, you know, Paris always mentioned about his, but yours is similar to Paris's, black and blue. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I dig them so far. They're somewhat comfortable. I will say that, and it might be more so the headset that I'm wearing.
Yeah.
You know, it does compress slightly. But I mean, they actually look pretty decent. You know, they've,
yeah.
Here they go. They're right here. They actually come, and this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about as well. Because for someone who wears glasses, I wear glasses all the time, right? So I was kind of concerned if I was going to be able to read any of the stuff that we have to talk about today. But as someone who wears glasses all the time, especially today where we always have to wear a mask and my glasses get fogged up and it's a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
The new Shack Eye Gear comes with this anti-fog lens cleaner, which actually works pretty well, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, when I saw that in the thing, I was like, here comes a little gimmicky cleaner that's not going to work. I'll be damned. They work so well, I put them on my regular glasses.
Nice.
And it works. It's fantastic. Nice. So now I've got something that I can wear a mask with. I'm not going to be worried about the fog and the condensation, and I can't see anything when I'm walking around or when I'm here, you know, playing games. So it's pretty cool. So
that's dope.
I'm digging them a lot, dude. So yeah. Like Danny said earlier, man, send in those questions. We read them here on the show, and you'll get yourself a pair of Shack Eye gear.
Hell yeah. So look, for those who are listening, we have an exclusive promo code. You're not going to find this anywhere else, only here in GTR. Go to shackeyegear.com and promo code GTR, simple, and you get 10% off your order. That's it. I mean, we have listeners that been trying that out and to purchase a couple glasses, you know, so that's pretty cool, man. Really, really cool. All right, so let's go with my favorite segment. Our favorite segment right here, man, and it's fan mail. It's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right. Wow. Okay, Pete. Thank you. So let's see. We have a couple questions here. So I'm going to go with this one. This one is from a listener from all the way from Australia. I think this was a great, great question. So let's go with this one first.
What's up, Gamertag Radio? My name's Paul, otherwise known as Boost King, from Australia, and I've been a listener for the last 6 months since Paris guest starred on Podcast Unlocked. Since then, you guys have been great, and I tune in every week. So recently, there's been lots of talk around Game Pass, Sony, and you know, should they play ball and all that sort of business, which you guys have talked about, which I absolutely love hearing your thoughts on. The question for me is, should Nintendo be held to the same standard? And by that, I mean, you know, is there an opportunity for Nintendo to offer a service similar to that of Game Pass with their platform? So the same rules apply. Their first-party titles, day and date, maybe access to their backwards-compatible library, which is just ginormous. I mean, I could easily see myself paying money for that kind of service, and I know a lot of gamers would. I think a lot of the focus has been on what Sony doing, but I think Nintendo is the other elephant in the room with massive sales, a great history, and just, you know, a very similar business model to that of Sony. And with the changing landscape with Microsoft and Game Pass and the Netflix style of gaming, I think Nintendo is just as much in the same boat as Sony, and would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that. So let me know what you think. Again, great work with the show. Keep up the great work, and talk to you next time. Have a great day, guys. Peace out.
Yeah, peace out, man. Shout out to everybody that listens to the show over there in Australia, man. So actually, I would love to go over there one day. I'd like to travel. And New Zealand, that's another spot. So, but yes, I totally agree, Pete. I totally agree. I've been saying it. Yo, Nintendo has the best library from all the way back when we were kids till now. Imagine Nintendo having a service similar to Game Pass. Oh my God, I'll be good, man. All virtual console, Super NES, Nintendo 64, GameCube. Oh man, it'll be amazing. Now, is it going to be online? I really doubt it, but at least I could download these games. That'll be amazing. I'll go back and play. I love playing old games. That's just me personally. But also, if they have also new games, have that also available on day one for those that don't want to buy games. You know, like now, I know the conversation we were having on Twitter recently is Returnal. Great game. Amazing, right? Very challenging. A lot of fun. It's $70. Now it's like, should I buy this game for $70 or should I just wait until the price drop? You know, at least I got used to Game Pass. So me going to Game Pass, I could just download the game. And if I like it, I'll play it. If I don't like it, I just delete it from my hard drive. You know, like it's a lot easier for me to try out these games, you know? So yes, Nintendo should definitely do that, man. I would love to see like a service like that from them. You know, what about you, Pete?
They don't need to. I don't think they need to. Why? Because, and I'm going to say this with all the love in my heart, because idiots like you and Paris are going to keep paying it, and you're going to keep buying stuff instead of forcing people like that, forcing companies like them to go and create a Game Pass style subscription service. They don't need to, because I'm an idiot just like you. I turned around and oh, it's a new Mario game. Let me go spend $60 on a game that I've already paid $60 two or three times over the lifetime because I've wanted it on different pieces of hardware. They're going to get you every time because they're Nintendo. And yes, I do agree that they should be held accountable. But until they have no more money in the bank and they're forced to do stuff like this to supplement their whole side of the company, they don't need to. They're making money hand over fist. Their IPs print money. All you hear is that printer go brr, 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 because it's making money. They have no need to create a subscription service to make more money. They already do it. So they just have to create, whatever the new hardware is going to be after the Switch runs through its life cycle, they're going to come up with the Nintendo Flip. I just made up a new machine. They're going to come out with the Nintendo Flip, and each and every one of us are going to pay $60 and buy the damn game again. Watch.
Yeah.
They don't need to.
No, wait, that, That's gonna happen. I look, I'm not saying that they need to do, like, I'm not saying, yo, Nintendo gotta do it. They're flopping. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that would be extra income if they really want. They can still sell these games and also have a service. That's extra income. You know what I'm saying? Like, personally, for me, I think it's a lot better. Because look, man, right now, Nintendo Switch Online, $20, it's cheap, it's whatever, but I don't know what's the next big thing for them. And I think, personally, having a service like that will be perfect for Nintendo. Perfect. They have the library.
Perfect for... I'm going to call you on this one. It's perfect for you, not perfect for them.
But how... Wait, Pete, if they're selling the games and also have a service, how's that bad? I don't get it.
We know that from a infrastructure development company, they aren't mm-hmm. that strong. They've relied on other people, namely Microsoft, for their online services. But we know that they're not in the market to put together a complete software service to do all of this. Okay, I'm sorry. It's right for you because it helps you as a consumer get access to all of these games at a much lower cost. Look at it from their perspective. You're going to keep coming back every time and pay $60 for that new release of Mario.
Yeah, I'm not saying no. I agree, but I'm just saying it will be awesome. As a fan, I think that would be cool. Like, they don't need to do it, but it will be awesome if they do it. But it will help them get even more money. They're not losing money if they launch something like this and still having these games available, like on the eShop. You could buy indie games and everything. Oh man, that'll be beautiful. I know there's a trial going on right now with, or I think it's already done with Apple and Epic Games, right? So there was a lot of leaks and conversation online. Like, we didn't really talk about it here, but I know one of the conversation was Phil Spencer, and I forgot who it was. It was somebody from Epic having that conversation. Like, Phil wants to release a Game Pass on the Switch. Like, he's trying to do that. It's more Nintendo not wanting that. But let's say Nintendo said, no, we don't want that, right? They can make their own. They don't need Game Pass. They have the library. They have the content. They could easily do that and still have these games available for purchase. And it will make tons of money. They're not going to lose money for doing that. I'm still going to be buying games no matter what. I'm just saying, like, but if they have that service, that will be a plus. That will be a plus for Nintendo. I know you're like, nah, they should just keep on selling games.
We
and that's
will
it.
Agree to disagree.
I don't know.
Simply, and the reason I say this is because from a financial cost perspective, mm-hmm. Nintendo would have to throw in so much money to generate and develop and upkeep that infrastructure for a software as a service.
Agreed.
That they would, I, and again, I don't know the numbers side of it, but mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense for them to invest that money. Yes, potentially they could see some kind of a return over X period of time, but why? Mm-hmm. Why spend the money to get to that when they know all we got to do is invest hardware in R&D for our next Nintendo device? And our players are going to come right back and say, oh, well, I want to play Mario Galaxy on this. Here's another $40-$50 and I'll buy it all over again because I've done it for the last 4 or 5 hardware generations.
Look, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, you know, we'll agree to disagree. We'll keep on going. All right. So we have the last one here because we're about to like wrap up the recording here. So let's play this one more question.
Hello, Gamertag Radio. This is Steven from Texas, longtime listener, big fan. And I have a question for you all. I want to know if you all think if it's more hard for publishers and games that are coming out to outshine their classic older games since everything gets compared to each other. Do you think it's harder for them to do their own thing since they're going to get compared to the original greatest, like Halo or any other great games that have come out, any shooters, RPGs? What do y'all think? Have a great day. I love listening to y'all. Danny and Paris, keep up the great work. Thank you.
And Pete. Pete's there too. Shout out to Pete. So I'm trying to figure out, like, what comparing new IPs to the older ones? That was the question, Pete.
So
I'm trying to figure out what exactly.
I don't know what the way I read it is. Is it more difficult for publishers to outshine their previous games and or IP, right? And I don't know. Should I even answer it? I mean, he didn't say my name. It's just for you and Paris. So
no. You should answer, man. What the hell, man?
It's all good.
GTR. What the
hell? It's all good, Steven. It's all good, Steven. Honestly, games are always going to be held to a higher standard, regardless. That's just us as a human, right? We're always going to want bigger and better from the next iteration or the next version. So I am always going to hold, for example, I'm always going to hold, and in this case, I'll use PUBG, right? I'm always going to hold them more accountable to do better for their next iteration. We know that they're developing PUBG 2.0. It should be better by all means than the original, right? Same as we talked about the Division earlier, you know, was the Division 2 better than the Division, you know, the earlier one? We all want it to be better because we want that game experience to always have that wow factor the next time you play it, the next time you play it, right? So the next, you know, the Division 3 should knock our socks off because it should iterate and be better than what the Division 2 was, similarly to what it was for the Division 1, you know? Mm-hmm. And any game that has, you know, a 2 next to it, or it's the next iteration, whether it was God of War or Infamous or whatever, any of those games should always strive to be better and to do better and definitely outshine their previous games. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, perfect example. That game has set the bar now for single player experiences on the Sony PlayStation. That next version, that next game has to hit. That next iteration has to slap day one. So absolutely, yeah. And it absolutely does make it more difficult because, you know, developers put their heart and soul into their games when they create and they develop these things. And so now they've got to do that all over again. You know, is that spark that was there for that first game still going to be there for game two? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've hit the money low. They hit the jackpot on the first one. Now you've got to not just duplicate it, but now you have to exceed that level of success. So yeah, absolutely. It's more difficult for devs and pubs to outshine their previous iterations. I would agree on that one for sure.
Now I'm going to, and we're going to go back. The first time you heard about PUBG, let's just say you heard about it. Battle Royale, you download it. Like you thinking about it when you finally got the game, were you comparing to anything else when you first time you open up PUBG? Because it was something new at that time. You know, like that's the thing. Like when we play a new game, especially a new IP, forget about Halo or you know, Last of Us, all these other games, right? Let's say a brand new game. Sometimes we might compare. Well, I mean, as a human being, we are gonna compare, you know. And remember too, all these developers, there was probably a game that influenced them to develop that game, and they probably added some new things, new experience, everything, right? But for you as a fan, trying on PUBG for the first time, were you even comparing to anything else back then when you the first time you downloaded the game? Because to me, it was like something new. I'm like, yo, I've never seen anything like this. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Now it's Battle Royale is everywhere, but, you know.
But see, that's what makes it that much more difficult for PUBG Corp or was it Kraton Games or whatever studio. That's what makes it that much more difficult to hit on that success and be able to iterate and continue that, right? There's been a drastic fall off on PUBG from a player base perspective. It still hits its numbers. You know, it still averages 300 and something thousand players, you know, every day, but it's maintaining that level of success. It's super hard to iterate on that and continue to succeed. It wasn't the first time that that game style or battle royale had come out. Obviously, H1Z1, which, you know, Brendan, you know, had a hand in developing that for Sony, and obviously, you know, he created the original mod off of Arma 3. You know, so
yeah.
You know, it was, you know, it was constantly iterating on that game style that allowed him to literally hit that grand slam walk off home run with what with PUBG. But the question now is will that next iteration hit just as hard, if not better? Because the expectation is there and the hype is there. People want to see what they're going to do, but is it going to be just as good, if not better? And that's the most important thing. Because if it does just as much, people are gonna be like, oh, well, why did this come out? I could have just played PUBG. You know, why did you waste our time and money coming out with PUBG 2.0? If you could have just you know, invested that money and time and effort into the first PUBG and just continued to iterate it and make it better, right? Destiny was great, but Destiny 2 is better, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah. Look at 100%. Yeah.
And so that is the bar that was originally set. Now they've got to sit there and best that and set the new bar and constantly do that with each iteration. So will Destiny 3 be the next best, or are they going to just continue, or are they going to do, as I mentioned, just continue to make it better and better and better and better? Why waste the time and effort and money into making a different version of it? Just keep iterating on top of it, make it a better game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what Halo Infinite is going to be about, and what I know they're going to have a new multiplayer in there. Is it going to be a battle royale? Is it going to be something unique? Is something different? You know,
who knows?
Man, yeah, we'll find out hopefully this summer, you know, during E3 2021. And look, we're going to have content. We're planning to stream like last year, you know, do the cold stream stuff like that. That was a lot of fun doing that last year. So anything else, Pete, before we wrap it up? Anything else? Because I have one more thing to talk about.
I don't think I have anything else.
All right.
What do you got?
For those that are watching or listening, remember, I talked about this in the last episode. I'm partnered with Bright. This is Ashton Kutcher company and a couple of people also involved. So I'm going to be teaching all about podcasting for a couple months here, only on Bright. So my first session is going to be May 19th. Tickets already been on sale now for a couple of days, and there's gonna be a good group of people that already purchased, and we are gonna be talking about how to create content, how to find your voice, how to get better in podcasting, content, interviews, everything. So this is the first session of many, but if you would like to get involved and be part of the session, just go right now under the description of this episode, and the link is gonna be there. May 19th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and make sure to check it out. It's going to be all masterclass. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, and that's about it for me. Again, we have a lot of content coming up because I have like nonstop virtual events happening this and next week. So make sure to tune in. There's going to be a couple surprises. Not going to say anything, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So head over to GamerTagRadio.com, post your comments and feedback. Listen to our past episodes. You could also find us on any podcast app. All you have to do is just search for GamerTag Radio, follow, subscribe, post a review, share with your friends, spread the word, help us out. It will get us to the top of the charts, man. All right? If you would like to be part of our fan mail segment or episode or even part of this giveaway for Shaq Eye Gear glasses, right, Pete? This is how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.